Okay, the question was asked of me, just what it is that I'm trying to do, or just what it is that I'm trying to prove. Well, I'll tell you what. In one regard, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring about a sea change, if you will, in this world. You know, this world, according to the Bible, basically comes with an expiration date. There are only a certain number of years that are going to be allowed to this world. The way that it's couched in spiritual terms is that 6 days or 6,000 years, because again, in spiritual terms, a day is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years are as a day. So, in 6 days would be 6,000 years. This is articulated in several places. Number one, obviously, in 2 Peter, where it straight up says that. And then in Barnabas, for example, it explains that straight up. It says that it's the Lord's own saying that a day shall be as 1,000 years and 1,000 years shall be as a day. So the 6 days that are given over to men to work correspond to these six spiritual days, or the 6,000 years. And then there will be a seventh period of 1,000 years. And so, basically, are we at the time when we should be transitioning to the true Sabbath, as Barnabas calls it? Are we close to the millennium? Well, you know what? There is a place. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, where Jesus passes over to Gadara or Gergesa or Gerasa or whatever. He goes across the Sea of Galilee, and he is met by either one or two demon eggs, depending on which book you're reading. And anyway, the upshot of it is Jesus asks him his name, and he says, I am Legion, for we are many. Now they ask him, first of all, have you come to destroy us before the time? Okay, and as is the case for many a pericope, or I guess a situation, a scene, if you will, in the gospel, there if there is a question that is asked, somehow, some way, somewhere, the answer to that question is nearby. Now, it may be in the previous pericope, it may be in the one that follows, it may be in one that's similar to it somewhere else, but most of the time it's right there in that very same scene. A question is asked and an answer is given, especially when the term answered and said is given, because basically it declares that it's giving you the answer right there by saying that. Now, in the case of the Gerasene demoniac, the Gergesene demoniac or whatever, this is one of those really, really famous contradictions where people are like, what, are the writers of the New Testament lost their minds? Why are they talking, there's one demoniac, there are two demoniacs, why are the three places named, etc.? Well, again, you have to look at the deep structure of things. Now, I'm not trying to lead people into Gnosticism. I'm not trying to lead people into anything. I don't have any kind of organization. I don't have any kind of anything. I don't have a support network. I don't have anyone working for me. No one is on my payroll. You know, I don't take money from people. You know, I don't do any of that stuff. I'm just a regular Joe Schmo guy like everybody else. But it's like this. You know, when the emperor's not wearing any clothes, you gotta call it. You know, and right now the emperor is not wearing clothes. The emperor is buck naked, okay? And somebody has to say it. Why do we need to go on with the charade? Why do we need to continue something that we know is false, especially when we know it is meant to end? They asked Jesus, have you come to destroy us before the time? So there is a time, right? So you should be looking nearby. Are there any cues? Are there any clues? Is there some way to tell us just when this time is? Well, again, in one instance there's one demoniac, and in another instance there are two demoniacs. Now, when they ask Jesus not to destroy them immediately, but to send them into this herd of pigs that's feeding nearby, all right, how many pigs are there? There are 2,000 of them, right? It says about 2,000. You know, why the about? Well, because, I mean, we don't know if it's 2000. We don't know if it's 1999. We don't know, you know, if it's 2001. We don't know if it's 2012 pigs. We just don't know. But those pigs represent the number of years that remain, about 2,000 years. And this is why there is no contradiction. Is there one demon egg or are there two demon eggs? Well, the demon eggs represent this age that before they judge, they got 2,000 pigs or thereabouts to actually go through before they are judged and cast into the abyss, right? Okay, so that judgment is 2,000 years off. We're pretty close to it, right? Which explains why there is either one or two demon eggs. It just depends on how you look at it. If you want to see a demon egg as 1,000 years, then there are two demon eggs, just as there are 2,000 pigs. Or if you'd rather see that as one period, there is one demon egg, one period of 2,000 years. All right, and we are just about there. All right, and you know, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to open people's eyes to the fact that there is a deep structure there. Why are there three places mentioned? For example, Gadara, Gergesa, Gerasa, or whatever. Well, again, this is the numbers three. The number three is used several times throughout the New Testament to describe Peter and his three denials. Peter represents the church. I say to you, thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, right? And as I've explained in about a million other places, you know, the each of the apostles has a certain spiritual significance. It just can be derived like a word puzzle or just like a math puzzle. I mean, it's parables. You know, Jesus says, I will open up my mouth in parables, you know, and speak secrets that have been kept, you know, since the foundation of the world. All right? Things are there. He's told us everything in advance. And everything is understood in retrospect, just as it was when in New Testament times the prophets spoke of the coming Messiah, right? And so when the Messiah did come, all of a sudden those prophecies that were in prospect could be understood as fulfilled, and then correspondingly understood in retrospect. Again, there is the Ark of the Covenant, in which there are three symbolic items. There are the tables of the law, there is Aaron's rod that budded and bore fruit, and there is the hidden manna. Now the hidden manna is spoken of in the future tense, right? To him that overcometh, it says in Revelation, I will give to eat of the hidden manna. So that's a future revelation. Right, the hidden manna is in this box of covenants, this Ark of Covenants. An ark is something that preserves something, just like Noah's Ark. There is the Ark of the Covenant. It preserves something for a future generation. All right, so that's the function of an ark, because every time there's an ark involved in anything, there is preservation involved. And there are two angels over this ark. One of them is facing one way, and the other one is facing the other way. These are the two spirits, one of prospect and one of retrospect. And over this box, which is designed to preserve these three symbolic items, which represent our covenants, again, Moses' tables of the law, that corresponds to the Old Testament. And guess what? Moses is at the Transfiguration with Jesus, right? And then at the rod, Aaron's rod that budded. Well, again, Aaron was Moses' brother. He was the primary spokesman, actually, between the two. Moses spoke with stammering lips, which is symbolic of the fact that Moses speaks in codes and parables, and he's hard to understand. People read him with the veil, Paul says, over their eyes to this day, because they don't understand how to read Moses. And I've touched on that in some of my previous recordings. And why does his rod get tested overnight and then bud in the morning? Well, the morning is symbolic of the dawning of the new day. When the day dawns, Peter says in 2 Peter, and the morning star arises in our hearts. We will be changed. We will be transformed. You know, and so the trial represents people competing for his authority. Aaron's rod represented his authority. Rod, if you look it up, rod and reed are mentioned together in the same breath in Revelation. It gave me a reed like unto a rod. Well, you know, the reed is what was used to measure back in Egyptian times. And it is actually the source, the root of the word that we have come to understand as the canon. You can go look it up. The word canon is derived from the reed, which is associated with the rod. Right? And why is that? Well, because if it's Aaron's rod or his authority, and it is tested overnight, then that night represents this age of darkness, right? Those who walk at night stumble, right? It is this age of stumbling. It is this age of darkness. It is this age of, 2,000 years, right? Which we are destined to be tested by the church. Jesus says to Peter, you know, Satan has desired to have you, that he might sift you as wheat. All right? So in other words, this is an age of testing. James says, don't be surprised at all the fiery trials which are there to try you. All right? This is, you know, the church is destined to go through this period of 2,000 years, but it's also destined to come out of it. And just as sure as we have lived and walked in darkness, the day eventually does come. And what does it say? It says that God will give us a knowledge and a wisdom that no one will be able to deny or to gainsay. All right? Now, a lot of people associate that with the early reign of the church. That was when Revelation was first given. And they talk about how at the time of Pentecost, for example, that this was fulfilled. But that was fulfilled in its day. It was the early reign. There was an early outpouring of the Spirit, and people understood things spiritually. This was when the truth was known. But unfortunately, and this is where some people kind of get hung up. They tend to look at the church as having preserved this mystery. They look at the church as having kept this information for us, preserved it or whatever, when in fact they haven't. When in fact they have been infiltrated, they have been taken over, they have been subverted. There is a spiritual meaning and there is a fleshly meaning to everything. There is a surface level meaning and there is a deep level meaning to everything. And because of that, you know, it is possible to hide the spiritual teaching behind a fleshly facade, such that if you just see, for instance, Peter, James, and John at the Mount of Transfiguration, but you don't see the Jews, the Christians, and the elect who are to come, because remember, John is being held back until the time of his return, just like Elijah is to come. And just as Elijah had already come, John the Baptist had already come and performed that same function in the flesh that John the Evangelist, who's being held back until the end of time, will perform in the spirit. And so those two are both named John because one announces his first coming and the other announces his second coming. So it's fitting that they should have the same name. But be that as it may, so that gives you the idea that at some point in the future, there is going to be a future revelation. Now, this is also contained in the Ark of the Covenant because Aaron's rod, that is to say the canon, and Aaron, of course, being the high priest, the book of Hebrews mentions that Jesus is our high priest. So if that's the case, then Aaron corresponds with Jesus. So we already have Moses is corresponding with the Old Testament, and if Aaron, his brother and the lead spokesman and the high priest, right, if he represents symbolically anyway Jesus, and his testament is symbolized by Aaron's rod. Well, something takes place in Aaron's rod. It is bound together with the other 11 rods of the other 12 tribes, or the other tribes of Israel. And his is the one that bears fruit. So, in other words, if we see the New Testament, Aaron's rod, in other words, bearing fruit when that day dawns, all right? And this new understanding or whatever is being held back until the end, and that day is dawning. And so it's fitting to present that at this time, because that is the antidote. All right, this is how we conquer Satan, through the blood of the Lamb, that is these 2,000 years in which we are baptized into his death. Jesus says, are you able to drink this cup that I am going to drink? Indeed, you shall drink this cup. This cup of what? This is my blood, right? The blood. The waters turn to blood, as it speaks of in Revelation. The waters being the word, they turn to blood. What does that mean? It means they turn to death, they turn to suffering, they turn to bloodshed, if you will. We are dead. You know, Paul says those who are baptized into the name of Jesus are baptized into his death. That is the blood of the Lamb. But when that day is over, and we now have this new word of his new testimony, because again, you must preach the gospel again before many nations and peoples and tongues and kings. All right, so there is a second preaching of the gospel. So the first one is in effect inadequate. Well, inadequate is probably the wrong word. It is there to keep us, in a sense, in the dark until the day dawns. And when the day dawns, then all of this stuff will become clear to us. And so what we got to do is we have got to shine the light. We have got to shout it from the rooftops. There is a second time. There is a second age. There is a latter rain. And all I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make it clear to other people that that is this time. This is our age. And we are called to preach this message and to speed his